Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:04 p.m. on Friday, March 9, 2018. Before we begin, I want to thank Lori Rowland, the House Judiciary Secretary, who's making sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kelsey Goodell from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. And I will note that Kelsey told us that she's been working with as the assistant of this committee for more years than I can remember. But she's always been incredibly diligent and organized and running the tech really, really well. And she's got a promotion and is going to work across the street in the legislative information, not in the LIO, but in the Terry Miller building on other deals. And we won't get to see her in judiciary anymore. So thank you very much for all the time you spent with us. And I also want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Ledoux, Representative Stutes, my vice chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Clayman. And also online at this time, we have Representative Reinbold. And Representative Kopp is also with us online. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Joint Resolution 29, Reauthorized Secure Rural Schools Act, sponsored by Representative Rauscher. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee, and here to introduce the bill is Darrell Breeze, staff to Representative Rauscher. Representative Rauscher, do you want to come forward as well, or do you want just your staff? And if you could both identify yourselves for the record, and you can begin your presentation. We always hold questions till the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the committee for hearing this bill. And H.J.R. 29 encourages the U.S. Congress to reauthorize the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act of 2000. The Secure Rural Schools, it's kind of a tongue twister, program expired and has created budgetary shortfalls for school districts around Alaska, which will continue if Congress fails to reauthorize this long-standing federal obligation to local governments. The Secure Rural Schools program compensates more than 700 forest communities nationwide and 33 communities in Alaska for timber harvesting revenue lost during changes in federal forest management policies. Historically, the school districts in Alaska have relied on a share of receipts from the federal program to supplement local funding for education services and roads. My staff, Darrell, is available to answer any questions and explain the resolution further should the need be, and I appreciate you all again for hearing it.
Thank you.
Did I put my name on the record? Representative Rauscher.
I think you did, but I'll be happy to hear it again in case you didn't. Mr. Breeze, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Darrell Breeze, staff to Representative George Rauscher. The bill is, I hate to say it, is a clear-cut, simple bill. It just calls on the U.S. Congress, whether through legislation in the U.S. Senate or the U.S. House, to reauthorize the Secure Rural Schools Act of 2000. The act expired January 1st, 2017, and stopped funding forward to local communities nationwide and throughout Alaska. In your packet, you'll find listings of the communities that are affected and impacted here in Alaska. And the amounts of money that they received over the last couple years, and in particular, it shows the decrease. Shows the FY16, which is Alaska FY17 numbers. And I'm going to take Anchorage for example because it's the top name number on the list. They received $62,000, and if you look over at the FY17, the state fiscal year FY18, they only received $3,581 because the program has expired and they were just paying out the last bit of money that they had in there. This money is important to school districts around the state. If I may, through the chair, read the list. The city of Craig, Hoonah, Heidelberg, Cake, Kluwak, Pelican, Angoon, Kaufman Cove, Edna Bay, Gustavus, Kasan, Port Alexander, Tenneke Springs, Thorn Bay, Annette Island, Chatham School District, Southeast Island School District, the City of Cordova, Valdez, Chugiak School District, Whittier, Metlakatla School District, and the Anchorage School District are all among those who receive funds from this. Yakutat, Wrangell, Skagway, Petersburg, Mat-Su, and the Kenai Peninsula School District schools, as well as Juneau, also receives funding from this program, which has expired. And the resolution is calling for the U.S. Congress to reenact this authorization so this money from the federal forestry program can come back to the school districts that are adjacent to U.S. national forests.
Thank you very much. So are there questions from the committee? I would note it's my intention to get to public testimony today, so I'm going to try to get finished with these questions in 15 minutes and, as usual, limit to questions of 1 minute per person or per question. Any questions? Hearing and seeing none. And Representative Reinbold and Representative Kopp, if you have questions or want to be heard on these things, you'll need to say something because I can't see you waving your hand where you are. Hearing and seeing no questions, we're going to go ahead to go to the public testimony. And I'm going to open up public testimony on House Bill or House Joint Resolution 29. Is there anyone in the room or online who wishes to testify? First in the room, anyone in the room? Online we have, looks like we have Pete Hoffner from the Cordova School Board. Mr. Hoffner, we give you 2 minutes for testimony if you want to tell us your thoughts on House Joint Resolution 29.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is Peter Hoffner. I'm on the Cordova School Board, and I want to thank the House Judiciary Committee for taking up this important resolution. The federal funds that come from the Secure Rural Schools Act are very crucial to many school districts in the state. For example, in Cordova was to receive $586,000 in funding, but did not receive it. Combined with the fiscal shortfalls, the city contribution to Cordova schools was reduced from the cap, where it had been funded for decades. Combine this with years of education flat funding, less dollars are going to the classroom in Cordova. I appreciate the House for sending this message to the U.S. House and Senate so that the Secure Rural Schools funding obligation continues as planned. Thank you again for taking this up.
Thank you very much for taking the time to testify today. Next, I have Alan Sorum from the Valdez City School Board. Mr. Sorum.
Yes, this is Alan Sorum. I'm on the Valdez City School Board, and I'm on the board of the National Forested Counties and Schools Coalition. And nationally, there are two companion bills in Congress to reauthorize SRS, the Old Timber Receipts Program. I've had a chance to visit with our delegation, and they're all co-sponsors and supporters of the federal legislation. I have been told, though, it's important to keep this at the forefront. Unfortunately, it's been dragging on for several years, and it's important to get this and keep this in front of our delegation and other members of Congress. So I do appreciate Representative Rauscher helping out with moving this forward, and I'm glad you're hearing it today. The resolution is really very similar to one the legislature passed about 6 years ago. I think it's fairly nonpartisan, and it enjoyed wide support at that time. And I would just encourage you to pass this and help us move it on to the next step. I think getting a message to Congress about the need for this program is important for our schools. So thanks.
Thank you very much. I don't have anyone else online that wants to testify, and I don't think there's anyone else in the room that wishes to testify. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 29. And the question for the committee, is there anyone that is contemplating any amendments to this particular resolution? Or would the committee be comfortable moving on this resolution today?
Mr. Chair, just speaking as someone, along with Representative Ledoux, who saw this resolution in its previous committee of referral, I have a very high comfort level moving this forward.
I hear and see no one that seems to object to moving, so I know it's not necessarily on the script, but Representative Christ Tompkins, can you make a motion to move this? Oh, yes, absolutely. Comments, please. Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I appreciate this. I really appreciate this resolution. I think it's critically important. I have actually three schools that are affected. One of them is Yuzinki, which isn't listed, and they are exceedingly concerned about the loss of these dollars, as is, as you heard, Cordova and Yakutat as well. It has a huge impact on rural schools, and I say let's move it and get it moving. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Reinbolder and Representative Kopp, any comments as to House Choit and Resolution 29?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me to speak in regards to this issue. I do support this resolution, and I don't have any specific questions. It is comment time, but I will say that I actually prefer having two hearings on bills. I would love to move it out today, but I just think good healthy practice is having two hearings on the bill. So with that, I'm not going to object to moving it out, but it would be my recommendation, you know, to have two hearings.
Any other comments on the bill? No. Nope. Representative Kopp, any comments on House Joint Resolution 29?
I fully support the resolution, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. So I see no other comments. Representative Christ Tompkins, can we have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we move CS for House Joint Resolution 29 State Affairs, Work Order 30-LS1116-D, from committee with attached recommendations and zero fiscal notes.
It may have a fiscal note because it's got a finance referral. So if there is one.
There's a goose egg being pointed out from the audience.
There is a fiscal note attached.
Attached zero fiscal notes.
There you go. Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing no objection, we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. Back on record. And our second and final order of business today is House Bill 219, Criminal History Check, State Employees and Contractors, sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is the second hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. To provide a brief recap of the last meeting, on Wednesday, committee members reviewed the bill and the committee opened and closed the public hearing. At this time, I would like to take up amendments to House Bill 219. And before I do so, I want to put on record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. The amendments process will be treated like floor amendments. The maker of the amendment moves the amendment and speaks to it with a three-minute limit. Then we'll take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question. Then we will proceed to discussion with each member, limited to 3 minutes. And finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. When we come to an amendment, the mover can either make the amendment or it will be withdrawn. We will not roll amendments to the back. Today we begin with amendment number one, which is my amendment, so I would move amendment number one.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. Amendment number one just changes the effective date from 2017 to 2018, and that's all that amendment number one does. Is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chair.
Is there further objection to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number one is approved. That brings us next to amendment number two, which was brought by Representative Eastman, but Representative Eastman is not, he has left the room. And so if Representative Eastman is not here, then we will not hear amendment number two.
I am desiring to move amendment number two, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Eastman, I'm sorry, but you are not excused from the call of the House today, and you're not, what's that? You can unmute him for a minute. Representative Eastman, you were not excused from the call of the House today. You were here when the committee started. There's no reason for you to be excused now, so I'm not going to hear the amendment since you're not here. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I was instructed that I was.
Thank you very much, and we're going to put you on mute now. Thank you very much. That brings us next to amendment number 3. Representative Reinbold.
I think they're all stapled together.
I've got 1 and 2.
Here, I've got 3. You want to call this 2 because it's not being offered? Number 2 is not being offered.
Sure, we can call it number 2. Representative Reinbold, what was originally named number 3 is we're renaming number 2 if you want to move amendment number 2. Representative Reinbold, are you with us?
Okay, they just unmuted. Sorry, I've been talking, but
we hadn't heard a word.
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. Anyway, I just wanted to move amendment number 2.
I'll object.
There's an objection, Representative Reinbold. Go ahead.
Okay, well, as you know, I sent 5 amendments in, and this is 1 of 5. And this one has to do with, this was basically we discussed in length, I believe it was 2 days ago, that this was, we needed very honest people having access to this data, and this just requires them to pass a polygraph test. No, I'm not.
Okay. You're just breaking up a lot. Try to be a little closer to the phone.
Landline with no speakers. There's not even a speaker on this phone. It's an old copper wire phone.
Okay. Well, that seems better now, so go ahead.
All of this is it just requires a polygraph test, a positive polygraph test before these people are allowed to access data because it's confidential data. I want to make sure there's honest people accessing this data.
And anything further before we have any questions for the maker?
No.
Okay. So, Representative Reinbold, I did have one question because we made an inquiry of Ledge Legal, and they noted that this would, it appears that this amendment would run in conflict to Alaska Statute 23.10.037 that actually prohibits requiring lie detector tests as a condition of employment, and the only exception is for police officers. And so how do you make this amendment square up with Alaska Statute 23.10.037?
Well, I think bottom line is that we want honest people with access to this data, and I think it should be a minimum requirement. If they're going to be accessing personal, highly confidential information, they should be in these incidences, have a lie detector test.
Thank you. Any further questions for the maker of the amendment? Hearing and seeing none. Any wrap-up on the amendment, Representative Reinbold?
No, I just think we need to hold these people to a very high standard because they're given access to highly sensitive, confidential information.
And Representative Stutz is the amendment. Representative Ledoux.
I think we ought to hold our people to very high standards, but there's a reason why polygraphs are not allowed as conditions of employment, and that is that there is not really a consensus that polygraph evidence is really good evidence. So, I mean, in the spy novels and stuff, you always put people under polygraphs, but people who are actually psychopaths can very easily pass polygraph tests. At least that's my understanding.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Is the objection maintained?
It is.
Can I respond to that? So basically, these are people that are employed. This is just passing a test to have access to this confidential data. And I think the polygraph tests are a measure of honesty. And hopefully we won't be hiring psychopaths to, you know, get into this data. We have 300 state employees that have access to this information. And I think it's very, very important that we ensure a high standard so that we reduce risk and liability to the state.
Okay. Thank you very much. If you could call the roll, and Representative Kopp and Representative Reinbold will both be voting by telephone.
Representative Price Tompkins?
No.
Representative Eastman not here? Representative Reinbold?
Yes.
Representative Kopp?
No.
Representative Stutes?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Chair Klayman?
No.
1 yay, 5 nays.
So by a vote of 1-5, amendment number 2 has failed. And that is we had a deadline of amendments for 5 o'clock. Those are the only amendments that were received by the deadline. So that concludes our discussion of amendments today.
Mr. Speaker?
I represented Reinbold.
Thank you. I did have within 4 hours, 4 business hours of the time that amendments were requested, I had them into Ledge Legal by 10 a.m. yesterday morning. They messed them up pretty significantly, and I worked with them back and forth all day. I got all of them to you by 5:10. I got them between 5:02 and 5:09 p.m. last night, and I had them all to you by 5:10. I also submitted to you 5 conceptual amendments just in case Ledge Legal couldn't meet the deadline, interestingly. And so I did have 5 conceptual amendments. So I am very disappointed in the process and the rush on this. So not exactly sure how you plan to proceed, but I'm very disillusioned by this process.
Thank you, Representative Reinbold. I appreciate your perspective, and I made it very clear that the deadline would be strictly enforced. And I actually was in a State Affairs Committee meeting watching their process, and I noted that Representative Christ Tompkins usually makes his amendments due at 3 o'clock on the day they're due, not at 5, and I started thinking that might be the practice of this committee going forward, but the deadline was set very clearly, and we're sticking to that deadline. That brings the bill back before the committee. Is there any further discussion of House Bill 219? And as usual, we'll limit comments to 3 minutes per member. Representative Ledoux.
So I'm reading this letter dated March 8th from Don Haberger, the community coordinator for the Reentry Commission.
Right.
And I guess I'd like the opportunity for Mr. Haberger to be heard, and what he says seems to be making a degree of sense as I read this letter.
Is Mr. Haberger, is that Mr. Haberger in the back? So, Mr. Haberger, I will be happy to have you come up and you can ask your questions, and there are reasonable inquiry, and we may, is there a Ledge Legal person online as well? We might see if we can get Ledge Legal online, depending on the questions that Mr. Haberger is raising. Go ahead and be sure to state your name for the record.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm community coordinator for the General Reentry Coalition. And I appreciate you inviting me up to testify. I realized you closed the process. But very, very briefly, finding reasonable ways to improve that are successfully reentering their community and putting a history of criminality behind them is something we're very interested in. Looking for barriers and trying to overcome barriers is something the coalition is about. As I was reading this, first of all, the title of the bill caught my attention yesterday in the legislative's list. I decided to listen to it. Yesterday, or Wednesday's testimony.
Right, that's fine. We won't hold you to know every day of the week perfectly.
Very good, sir. Thank you. At any rate, as I was looking through the bill and as I read Department of Revenue's kind of protocols for their regulatory or hiring protocols, it seems like there was a possible way to for somebody who is overcoming a history of crime to enter into the field. However, when I read the background investigation for contractors, to me it looks like a very clear door that says that you must submit and pass a background. The problem that I see is that there is no definition of what pass a background check means. I couldn't find it in AS 1262. I also looked in our public accountancy statutes just to see if there was anything there. I didn't see anything there. So it raised enough of a flag to me that I thought I would bring the issue before the committee just to see, number one, do you agree? And if there is a solid door that somebody who is successful can't get past, I would ask the committee to at least consider that and open the door somehow. That's my testimony.
Representative Liu, follow-up questions for Habiger?
Habiger, yes, sir.
I apologize for mispronouncing the first time. I mispronounced it, too, so the committee's not doing as well as Mr. Habiger. Go ahead.
Well, I've known Mr. Habiger for a long time, so I probably shouldn't have mispronounced it. So if you're working for the state, so there's specific criteria in order for you to fail this test, but if you're working for a contractor, it's just pass or fail, and nobody has defined what pass means? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's the way I read it. Again, Department of, you posted on the website their policy. Their policy stated that if there are recent crimes, various levels, let's say 1 to 5 years, you have a misdemeanor, then you are not eligible to have employment in these particular fields. If it's a felony, it might have been 10 or 15 years, whatever that was. At least there's a pathway. There is also an element of protection because of the sensitivity of the job class. However, again, just the way I read this, it's submit and pass. If I were working with the state and I had an employee who may have worked with me for 4 years and all of a sudden I got a significant contract with DOR or Department of Labor and I didn't have any other work, I'd look at my employee and say, I'm sorry, but you don't pass and I don't have any other work, we're going to have to let you go. That's my concern.
Thank you. Is anybody here from Department of Revenue? Online. Okay. That's going to be Brandon Spanos. And one of the queries that I would raise, Mr. Spanos, in addressing this is the language about submit to and pass. And we particularly talked a lot at the last hearing about a conviction involving dishonesty and that this is specifically people who would have access to federal tax information. I understood submit to and pass in the context of pass meant they didn't have the kinds of convictions involving dishonesty that would be a reason they couldn't have access to the information, and that pass, although it isn't defined, its practical application is in that way. But I think Mr. Spanos is the one to respond, but if not, we have Carol Beecher online as well. If you can address these questions about what it means to pass a background investigation.
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division and Department of Revenue. And yes, I agree that, our interpretation of that pass our criminal background investigation. We do have contractors that are currently working for us, and they submit the same form that our employees submit to us. We have our criminal investigation unit run that background check, and we are the ones that determine whether they pass or not. We don't have the employer run a background check or pay someone else to have that done. We run it ourselves, and we follow the same policy.
Representative Ledoux, did you have follow-up questions? You have a query in an inquisitive look on your face. I may be getting ahead of the game.
So it sounds like right now that's the way you do it, and that makes a certain degree of sense, but I'm not sure there's anything in the statute that mandates that it be done like that. So another administration, another policy, another way of doing things. And I guess I'm just sort of wondering whether or not how it's done and the definition of pass, perhaps should be specified a little bit more.
Mr. Spanos, or if you want to pass to Ms. Beecher, either one of you probably can answer this. Go ahead, Mr. Spanos.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair. You're correct. Current policy is really what's dictating how we handle our background checks, and that could be changed. I do want to stress that the bill, HB 219, is asking for the fingerprinting authority to give us the ability to run a national background check. So we have been following our current policy to run local background checks, and which includes local background checks for any state the employee has lived in the past 10 years. And that could change, that's correct. But we anticipate following a similar procedure for many years. But, and the bill itself passed, and I certainly wouldn't be opposed to clarifying that, but I can't say why it says that different from the employee.
So if you start with the perspective that pass is at least at some level somewhat ambiguous, but you're trying to if all the statute said shall submit to a background investigation, just submitting to the background investigation really doesn't convey the notion that there are certain individuals based on their history that shouldn't be given access to the information. And that doesn't mean, I mean, sometimes people that have convictions involving dishonesty, there may be a period that people are willing to say they've had enough time to pass that they should be cleared, just as would a state employee that might or may not be limited to have access. But the concept of passing is, I think, pretty well understood. It means whatever, I mean, it doesn't tell what the standard are, but it says, not only do you submit to it, but you look to see if that criminal history is important for purposes of what you're gaining access to, and that's what's being done in regulations, which seems to me to be a pretty sensible way to approach. People talk about passing background investigations all the time, and what they're looking for, depending on the circumstances, is what are the background investigations that would preclude you. Just in the same sense we do background investigations of people that are working with kids in the schools. We don't want people that have a history of child molestation to be working in the schools where they might have access to kids, but we don't, in the statute, have this long list of every single thing that they have to clear to be able to go back and teach schools with the kids. We basically want the background investigation and be confident they actually have passed, whatever that may mean. And I tend to think that if this were challenged, that a court would not have a lot of confusion about what it means to pass a background investigation. I mean, police officers have background investigations all the time before they get hired, and we can be sure that people with murder convictions are not passing that, but we don't have a long list of which crimes are the basis for not hiring and which are the basis for hiring. So I think the question you raise is a good one, but I think the contractors who are not even state employees are being treated the same way in terms of who's gaining access to the confidential information as we are treating state employees.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't know. Is that satisfactory, Representative?
I think so.
Okay. Any other further questions or comments about the bill? Or questions?
Can I have a moment about the bill?
Hold on. And I'll get to your comments, but I know we got a witness that was invited up. Do you have any questions for Mr. Habiger? No, okay. So we're back to comments on the bill. Representative Reinbold, go ahead.
Okay, and are we limited to 3 minutes? I don't know what your policy is.
Yep, it's 3 minutes.
Okay, so I'm going to talk 5 points about the bill and 5 points about process, please. So first of all, I'm going to say that the bill was brought up Monday, and it was going to be pushed out roughly within an hour. After pushback, we got the opportunity to do amendments. Within 4 business hours of learning of the deadline, I had all my 5 amendments alleged legal. Several hours later, I started getting my amendments back. I stayed very close to the computer so I could respond. They were very misconstrued, my amendments, and I was
informed that they were not going to meet the deadline, but they could give me no reason why they weren't going to meet the deadline. So basically, I submitted five conceptual amendments before 5 p.m. to the chair in order to have the opportunity to present my concerns. The only thing they could tell me is that Doug Gardner needed to review them, and that was part of the process that was slowing everything down. I had concerns. Basically, my five amendments were one about the polygraph, which we had discussions about, to hold a high standard so we don't have liability as the state. I also had an amendment that stated any serious violation or breach or in an authorized access to data needed to notify within 72 hours of the person or corporation that was breached. They have the right to know if their information was breached. I also, one of my amendments was this could not be a pathway in any way to help establish or help with an income tax. I also had an amendment that our people who were over allowing the authorization of access to data had to have very careful measures and very good monitoring log, and that if anyone unauthorized data, that there needed to be swift discipline. And my last amendment was that if there was a gross violation of unauthorized data, that it be forwarded to law enforcement. I think this is such incredibly sensitive data that can be abused. We only want the highest quality people that are very honest and then a very rigid monitoring system. I will be an absolute no on this because I believe there's obstruction in my ability to amend this legislation. And if it doesn't pass, then all we are is not federally compliant. It seems like a lot of you guys want to be federally compliant in every area except for marijuana. And I just feel like it's hypocrisy. So I will be a no vote. And those are my comments.
Thank you very much. House Bill 219 as amended. Representative Cobb, did you want to add anything today?
Well, I support the bill. I think that Mr. Habiger brings up some good comments, you know, thoughts that we should always have. If you have maybe a college student that moves his professor's car as a prank and gets tagged with some offense, and 15 years down the road, it still shows up as a disqualifier. I think that's what Mr. Habiger was getting at. And I don't know that right now is the time to address it, but I think the principle of background checks is an excellent one. And my memory is that the presenter of the bill, the deputy director, said that violations of the protocol were misdemeanors subject to a criminal charge and termination, and that a log is kept of every time federal tax information is accessed, and I don't think I misunderstood. I also think we went over our last meeting that giving any employee a polygraph was against the law. So I was surprised to hear the amendment come up. You're right, Mr. Chair, that only police officers are given those. That would be quite a debate just on updating that law all by itself would be a heavy lift. So, yeah, I think anybody who accesses federal tax information should have a background check. I think all of us want that. I don't think there's any committee member that doesn't want that, so I'm fully supportive of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Anyone else wanting to comment? Hearing and seeing no others, Representative Christ Tompkins, can I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. As soon as I find the right work order number. I move 30-GH1938 /A of HB 219 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
And I object.
And Representative Reinbold, I've heard you under the rules as I've had them explained to me in other committees that when you're on the telephone, you are allowed to make amendments and vote on amendments, but you're not allowed to vote on the actual moving of the bill. So we cannot recognize your objection for purposes of moving the bill. Hearing and seeing no objections, House Bill 219 will move from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. With that, we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 12 at 1 p.m. We will hear House Bill 79, Gun Violence Protective Order, sponsored by Representative Tarr. I anticipate that we will primarily be having public testimony on the bill at that time. And with that, we will stand adjourned. The time is now 1:49 p.m. if you'll stay after to sign the paperwork.